Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Story is brought to you by Scotia iTrade. There's a trader in all of us. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is woke.
You might not say, oh, what does a gender lens have to do with building this new highway or this new pipeline or something? Well, there are gender impacts. When you bring construction workers into a rural area, there are social impacts.
You might think statements like that are admirable or horrible. You might take issue with the word woke itself. You might think Trudeau goes about signaling that wokeness in an embarrassing dad kind of way. But you can't deny that it's a major part of his brand, and by extension, his party's. And you probably aren't ambivalent about that. Trudeau is emblematic of the rift that smug Canadians used to ascribe to American politics. We might not brawl over Thanksgiving dinner yet, but the evidence shows we're leaning more and more towards labeling those on the other side of the political aisle our enemies, rather than neighbors who see things differently. And that's just in time for a federal election. The growing polarization was something we heard about over and over on this podcast from our guests last year, and it's likely to get a whole lot worse heading into October's vote. With that in mind, our friends at Maclean's decided to dig into the vast trench that separates liberals and conservatives in Canada and figure out what's happening in each camp that's pushing them further apart. Over the next two episodes, we will do the same thing, starting with today and our first big question: what's wrong with Canada's left? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. John Geddes is the Ottawa bureau chief at Maclean's. He tackled the left side of the ledger, and he also was a guiding force on the project. So, John, how did this come about, and why did you guys decide to do it?
You know, it sort of spilled over onto us from south of the border. There's been a lot of good journalism in the U.S., and some in Britain, too, on the idea that there's a much more polarized environment in American politics and
right.
British politics, obviously Trump and Brexit. We hear some echoes of that in Canadian politics, but we started wondering to the degree to which it was real, the degree to which it was just sort of a social media phenomena, and we wanted to kind of probe what's the same about Canadian polarization, how much are we part of the same, swimming in the same pool maybe as the Americans and the Brits, and how much are we different? So that was the starting point.
And what was the answer? Because I'm really curious about that. I should preface this by saying one of our biggest issues that we identified in kind of the year-end thing that we did was the growing chasm between the left and the right and nobody talking to each other. And I often wondered if that's amplified by social media or if that's really how we feel.
Yeah, and it's a hard question to answer, but I think the closest we came to a definitive answer was trying to get our friends at Abacus Data to do some polling on this. And it wasn't conventional polling, Jordan. It was very provocative questions, and many of them that we asked people. And then the criteria Abacus settled on was they would say, okay, who says I hate conservatives or I hate liberals? Who agrees with one of those two statements? And who, in addition to that, says one of the two following things, if you can follow where I'm going here: you don't like compromise, or you view the people who vote differently from you as your enemies. So we're trying to look for people who answer to these pretty provocative statements with words like hate and being against compromise and viewing some people as enemies. People who answer yes to those kind of questions, we view those as the sort of polarized voters.
The language of social media politics.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of echoing that. And what we found was, Abacus found, was that about a quarter, 26% of the population holds those kind of deeply entrenched political views. And that leaves about three quarters being more open to being persuaded. So, you know, is that a glass three quarters full or three quarters empty answer?
Yeah.
There's a loud, determined, angry quarter of the Canadian electorate out there. That's basically what we found.
So from that, you guys started kind of taking a look at the people who are backed into their respective corners. And colleague Shannon Proudfoot looked at what's wrong on the right of the spectrum, and we're going to talk to her tomorrow. But you looked at what's wrong on the left, which makes me ask, because I know a whole bunch of our listeners are going to ask it, and because I've seen this response on Twitter. isn't this like both sidesism? Are you equating the two ends of the political spectrum as like there are some very fine people on both sides, popular phrase?
No, this was a big problem in the packaging and sale of the project. We really don't want to claim that there's some kind of equivalency or symmetry, you know, in this thing. But there are important polarizing factors, if you will, on both sides. So one of the things we tried to do was look at moments where the Liberal Party, the governing Liberal Party federally, said or did things that seemed to, you know, poke a finger in the eye of people who are on the other end of the political spectrum or even at the other side of kind of culture war type divides. So there are a few cases that spring to mind. One was some listeners might have heard of the so-called attestation debate. It's amazing that that word entered our political vocabulary last year. And what that was the Liberals saying that they wanted people applying for Canada Summer Job Grants to attest that they respected certain values, and that included reproductive rights values. So obviously groups who are opposed to abortion found that surprising. They were being asked to check off a box saying that they respected those rights, which in some level they clearly do not respect. And this seemed like a kind of a tone-deaf moment for the government, where they weren't just trying to impose a policy, which I think is reasonable to think that you're not going to use Canada Summer Jobs money to pay for people to do anti-abortion campaigning, but they wanted to actually ask people to declare what they do and do not respect. The government realized they made a mistake, and late in 2018, they reversed that and went with a different kind of tack on that whole thing. But it was an interesting moment because it seemed to confirm to conservative Catholics and evangelicals in particular that there's something about the sort of downtown, urban, progressive ethos of the Trudeau Liberals that doesn't get them, you know, that doesn't communicate to them. And there have been other cases too. We list several of them, but the point is not to say these lapses on the part of the government represent that they're inherently polarizing or that they're saying stuff that's as bad as anything being said on the other side. The point is just to say where we see polarization, in part it flows from missteps, misstatements, poor communication, and sometimes just an outright failure to grasp the mindset of the people who are on the other side of the divide. And the divide is, it has a bunch of dimensions, but one of them is a sort of urban-rural split. And often the Liberals seem to us to have trouble communicating to rural Canadians.
Trudeau's image has pushed the Liberals into a place where they're seen as very progressive. Yeah. And the associations with that are very polarizing.
Yeah. And how did they get there? Well, there's a number of answers to this, but the answer I get from people inside the sort of Trudeau brain trust is something like this. In the 90s, the Chrétien Liberals in Canada, but also the Tony Blair Labour Party, New Labour in Britain, and the Bill Clinton Democratic Party in the U.S., they concocted a version of liberalism that included a lot of some tax cuts, fairly stringent deficit control, a big push on free trade, and to some degree a big push on investments in technology. And the bargain there was you're going to have a kind of business-friendly, open market-friendly version of liberalism that would help everybody. And the interpretation of what happened in that era that comes out of the main people around Justin Trudeau, but not just Justin Trudeau, the people around Kathleen Wynne thought the same thing, was that it didn't quite work. It produced economic growth, but it didn't solve problems of inequality. And in fact, inequality in terms of wages may have actually gotten worse as a result of the sweeping policy mix that was in play in the 90s.
Yeah.
So they came to power thinking we have to correct that. And one of the things we have to do is correct it by bringing in policies traditionally associated with the left of the political spectrum having to do with income redistribution. So the big stuff for the Trudeau Liberals have included the Canada Child Benefit, rejigging the Canada Pension Plan, a whole bunch of policies that basically are aimed at reassuring people who feel like they were being left behind in an era of globalization that, no, the government is going to step in to try to make sure some of the wealth flow or more of the wealth flows to you. So that sounds to most people, I think, like basically a more left-wing prescription than what we were hearing back in the Chrétien Clinton Blair days. And so part of the way we got to this point where the Liberal Party feels more left-wing, and I'll leave it to Shannon to maybe explain why the Conservative Party sometimes feels more right-wing these days, is that it's a reaction to the sort of interpretation or analysis of what happened during the 90s.
What's that doing to the sort of typically Canadian, and I feel like it is typically Canadian because we've talked to a lot of people about this, typically Canadian center or maybe even center-right liberal voter,
right?
Because this is where the polarization comes in.
Yeah, I think you're hitting it there. So where are the center-right liberals, sometimes used to be called blue liberals, where are the center-left, well, progressive conservative Tories, where are they feeling most at home? And I think that is the question that has to sort of be answered in the 2019 election. So it could be framed, if you look at it from the Trudeau government's point of view, the Trudeau Liberals' point of view, as they've governed in a way that has made them look mainly like a sort of center-left government, a government that's sort of proudly progressive and wants to be identified with, well, if this isn't too clumsy a phrase, identified with identity issues. Like, do you identify with progressivism, with environmentalism, with feminism? That's the way they've defined themselves. I think what they'd like to do going into an election year is tack a little bit more to the center, and that would mean trying to accentuate places where they've tried to promote economic growth, and that would include things like the Canada Infrastructure Bank, their big push on trying to get some pipelines built finally, which is a problem in its own right. But all these kind of interventions that seem to be kind of pro-business, pro-economic growth, I think they'd like to shift some of the attention back to that.
Up next.
Among Canadians who say, I'm a liberal, that's about 28% of the Canadians will identify with the party directly. Only about a third say they hate conservatives. But among conservatives, that's about a quarter of Canadians identify as conservative. About 50% say they hate liberals.
We all have investment goals, and Scotia iTrade can help you reach yours. Access free tools and resources to sharpen your investment skills. Visit ScotiaiTrade.com to start direct investing today. Scotia iTrade, there's a trader in all of us. Has Justin Trudeau changed the identity of what it means to call yourself a liberal in Canada today?
I think he has, or he's at least shifted that identity. Who are the people in the Justin Trudeau government who would parallel to, say, John Manley or Paul Martin in the old Chrétien government? There were always those voices of business liberalism, blue suit liberalism, corner office liberalism. You could maybe argue that Bill Morneau and Jim Carr are in that mold, but certainly the most prominent issues and players around the Trudeau government, they're in a different zone, right? It's Trudeau himself, Catherine McKenna, Jane Philpott. They want to be identified with issues like feminism, concern for Indigenous reconciliation, concern for the environment. Those are all issues that sort of activate and animate the kind of progressive core of the Liberal Party now. A lot of those younger voters who came out in 2015 and helped push Trudeau over the top, it has to be remembered. So, you know, those identity issues, they're powerful on an emotional level, but they're also potent on an electoral level.
And are they potent for the other side, too? Because certainly on the issue of immigration, we've seen recently the Conservative Party taking a pretty hard tack on that and trying to use statements and media opportunities that Trudeau and his team might feel really work for them against them on that issue.
A couple of points on that. Like, one is everywhere in the world where right-wing populism has risen, both in its most extreme and obnoxious forms, but also in its forms that aren't as frightening, there's been an element of concern about immigration as part of the mix. It can be outright xenophobic racism, or it can be something much milder than that, but it's part of the mix for right-wing populism. So I think it's kind of an obvious thing that the Canadian Conservatives are going to want to tap into. And I think we have to be careful in not denouncing that as automatically invalid. I mean, clearly there are, realistically, there are issues about the border in Canada right now that didn't exist 3 or 4 years ago. They're the kind of border crossing that's become routine. I call it a trickle because I don't really think it's big enough to call it a crisis. But
not everyone is calling it a trickle.
No, a lot of people are calling it a crisis. And I don't think it is a crisis, but there are legitimate policy debates there. It's just how much is it valid to amp them up the way that it's being done? That's the question. Like, just on this question about if we're thinking about the degree to which the Conservatives play off the Liberals on some of these hot button issues, I thought one of the interesting things we discovered through the Abacus research that was done was that among Canadians who say, I'm a liberal, that's about 28% of the Canadians will identify with the party directly. They consider themselves liberals. only about a third say they hate conservatives. They will buy into the term hate. A third. But among conservatives, that's about a quarter of Canadians identify as conservative. About 50% say they hate liberals. It's the kind of animus against your opponents is greater in the conservative base than it is in the liberal base. So if we look then at the tactics of Andrew Scheer and Justin Trudeau, I think it's fairly obvious where that's going to tend to nudge them. Andrew Scheer wants to appeal to and connect with a base that really hates liberals. And Justin Trudeau needs to appeal to and connect with a base that is less likely to hate conservatives. They're obviously not conservative supporters, but there's a difference between one in two of your supporters saying, "Hey, I hate the other guys," and one in three saying it's a factor in both camps, but it's a bigger factor in Andrew Scheer's camp.
Given that the conservatives can kind of point to their base not wanting to be liberal to get everybody on board, how hard is it to unite the left in Canada in the same way that kind of the right side of the spectrum seems to come together a little bit stronger with their own disagreements about liberal policy?
Well, there's no question that the left is more fragmented in Canada. If you look at the polarized voters we identified in the Abacus survey, about 45% of them are conservative backers, and about 47% back one of the leftist center parties, but that is scattered among liberals, NDPers, and Greens. So just almost by definition, it's a more divided group. On the other hand, there are moments where not just the left and center left in Canada, but even beyond that, Trudeau has shown an ability to bring people together. And I think the most obvious example was when he sparred with Donald Trump coming out of the Charlevoix G7 summit in June, where everyone will remember that Trump blasted off, went a little Twitter tantrum after he left the conference about Trudeau saying some, frankly, fairly mild-mannered things about American tariff policy.
It would be with regret, but it would be with absolute certainty and firmness that we move forward with retaliatory measures on July 1st, applying equivalent tariffs to the ones that the Americans have unjustly applied to us. I have made it very clear to the president that it is not something we relish doing, but it is something that we absolutely will do, because Canadians, we're polite, we're reasonable, but we also will not be pushed around.
What's interesting is that week was by far and away Justin's best week in the polls in 2018. This is confirmed by both liberals and non-liberals with their own polling and with publicly available polling. So you step back and say, what happened there? Well, what happened was the generalized Canadian unease, which crosses the political spectrum, by the way, it's kind of remarkable, about Donald Trump, was activated. And a Canadian prime minister who seemed to express a kind of moderate pro-Canada point of view, wasn't a staunchly progressive or not progressive, just a kind of pro-Canada, I'm defending the country's interest point of view, was able to get a lot of goodwill and support on side. Now, that's the kind of gift that Donald Trump gives, but it does show that there's a big swath of the Canadian public opinion that's ready to congeal when the messaging is appealing.
What do you think is the biggest challenge for the left over the next 9 months leading up to the election? What's the big thing they have to get done if they're going to pull this off?
I think if we think about the left as being dominantly mainly the Trudeau liberals right now, I think what they need to do is remember that the people who support them most vigorously on Twitter, who donate money to the party, who show up to rallies, who cheerlead on valid issues like global warming, fighting climate change, like Indigenous reconciliation, that a lot of those people are well to the left of the 75% or so of the Canadian population that doesn't feel that they're polarized either into the left or right wing, and that the messaging has to be, just no matter how tempting it is to cheer, to pitch your message to those most active, most energetic, most vocal supporters, you can't risk doing that. You need to pitch your message towards mainstream Canadians who are feeling less sure about which side they want to support, less certain about some of these messaging, and want to hear, a more nuanced, middle-of-the-road kind of message. So I think that's the challenge. The challenge is to remember that The people you want to talk to the most are not necessarily the people who are talking back at you on social media or showing up at rallies. You've got a large group of voters there who just don't communicate that way. That's not the way they engage in politics.
Thanks, John.
You're welcome.
John Geddes, Ottawa Bureau Chief at Maclean's. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotia iTrade. You can visit scotiaitrade.com and start direct investing today. For more from us, of course, we're at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can leave us a note there. You can also check out some of our other episodes. And you can check out all our other podcasts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. We've got a new one for you coming next week. It's called Three Trips Ahead. Go take a look. And we are everywhere. You get podcasts on Apple, Google, Stitcher, or Spotify. And if you want to talk to us directly on social media and call us names or like our posts or whatever, we are at TheBigStoryFPN, and we are always watching our mentions. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.